All right, now I think we're moving on now to the AI presentation. Am I right?
We are.
Yes, okay, very good. So let me go ahead and turn it over to Gabe. Let him
Actually, you're
tell us a
turning it
little.
over to me.
Oh, you're the moderator. Yeah,
Yes.
well, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Well, go
Not
ahead and take it away.
you
Not
scared me for a second, Rob.
a
That was a little scary, yes.
Yeah, that was.
Anyway, welcome everybody. I hope that you all have enjoyed the presentations today thus far. So AI, a little daunting for some, exciting for others, and just very. It's a new frontier in the way we do things technologically, if I can speak. And so I thought, when Sarah and I were talking at a back meeting in Sacramento a few months ago, we thought how good it would be to have a session on this because one of our presenters is super passionate about this subject. So I want to introduce our panel. We have Eli Andres, who is an adaptive technology specialist at Resource Center, Resource for Independence, Central Valley. We have someone who we all know very well, Dave Griffith, assistive technology instructor at the Lighthouse line in San Francisco. And we have somebody who's no stranger to us all, Joe Xavier from Department of Rehabilitation. And we're going to be talking about AI from an employment perspective, as well as from an educational perspective, and just AI in an everyday type setting situation. So I think what I'd like to do is start with Joe and let's hear his perspective. And it's going to be a very informal conversation. Your participation is going to be needed as well. So we will have time for Q&A for these three gentlemen. And so definitely feel free to ask whatever strikes, at the moment. So, Joe, go ahead and take it away.
So, Gabe, thank you.
And it's Guillermo.
Guillermo, sorry. So, first, just want to say hello to everyone. And just to make sure that there's no misunderstandings, I am formerly the director for the Department of Rehabilitation. And so, when I was asked to come here by originally Sarah and Guillermo, obviously, this is something that was very much on my mind in that role. Obviously, something I still have lots of passion about, but certainly not here today, per se, as the representative of the department, given that I have retired effective the end of last year. Let me share with you a little bit about what my mindset is when I think about artificial intelligence, and then what are the things when it comes to employment and the workplace that were and remain very much in my mind. First, my mindset. I think a lot about past technological milestones and what transpired during those periods of time, including how individuals with disabilities were accounted for. And as we all know, quite often, it was an afterthought. Oh, yeah, we need to. Oh, yeah, we will. And not, we're thinking about it and doing it on the front end. I also think about, particularly back in the 80s and 90s with the onset of personal computers, the fear was that personal computers would replace people. And I think it's safe to say that while personal computers may not have replaced people, people who use personal computers have certainly replaced individuals who would not or do not use personal computers. I also think it's important to keep in mind, and something that I was always very cognizant of, that the exponential growth around artificial intelligence makes what we know today obsolete just in a matter of weeks and a few months. So what we know today, don't worry about it. It is changing and changing very rapidly. I think it's essential. The principles and values around the use and the application of artificial technology be centered on people. I think it's important to keep in mind that it will be as pervasive as digital technology. So anywhere where digital technology exists today, AI is or will be there. And I think it's important that AI account for accessibility and the disability rights of individuals with disabilities. So let me talk a little bit about this from the employment perspective. So first, it's important to recognize that transformative artificial intelligence, AI, will only be effective and will only be transformative if and when leadership embraces it, adopts it, and acts on it. One of the pillars that is very much in my mind around AI is reasonable accommodations for individuals in the workplace. It applies to virtually all disabilities and certainly blind and visually impaired. It expands the effectiveness of assistive technologies for individuals with disabilities. It provides opportunities for solutions for accommodations for individuals with disabilities we're not even thinking of today. And of course, it provides the opportunity to increase both personal and professional independence for the individual in the workplace and the everyday community. So when I think about AI from the workforce perspective, it enables the ability to enhance and maximize staff's performance both in public sector and in private sector amongst all of our service providers as an example of the private sector. So if I think about how that can come to play as a workforce multiplier, I often would think about that if we could save 2 hours a day from each of the 2,000 employees workforce, it would generate the equivalent of 500 positions of capacity across the organization. And that is particularly important in the light of the fact that, you know, the number of positions continue to be reduced because of the budget implications that we have in the state, both at the federal and at the state level. I think it's essential that staff need to be able to effectively engage and understand how to use AI in order to maximize it as part of the workforce, but more importantly, to engage with the individuals that come to the department and come to all of the organizations for services. One of the concerns that I've long held is that individuals in the workforce who are either unwilling or unable to effectively adapt and engage with AI will exit the workforce prematurely and find the need to return to their workforce. And then the very reason they exited that barrier now becomes a much larger barrier when they try to get back into the workforce. So finally, let me touch on individuals who are coming to our programs and services. And when I say ours, I'm not talking about just the Department of Rehabilitation. I'm talking about all providers, right? Individuals that come to us for services, AI is a tool to help that individual become ready for employment. You can use it as mock interviews. You can use it in research for particular job functions and particular duties that a job may entail. You can use it to prepare your applications and your cover letters and the things that you would otherwise use for the job. But it's also essential because that individual is more than likely going to have in their first job the need to effectively engage as part of their job with artificial intelligence. And so in order for them to be competitive, they need to know that going in, not after the fact. Think about it in the same way that you think about a PC. Imagine somebody applying for a job that required computing skills, and they get there and they don't have any computing skills. One, how effective will they be or how competitive will they be in the interview process? And two, how will they actually be able to perform the functions of the job if they don't have that? The other thing that very much was on my mind and continues to be in my mind is for the individual who's either unwilling or unable to effectively adapt and engage with AI, what becomes of their employment options? That to me is a severe restriction on what they will actually have an opportunity to go to work on. So finally, I would say that AI applies to much more than employment. It applies to healthcare. It applies to education. It applies to community living, just as a couple of examples. I will stop my comments there and send it back to Guillermo to turn it over to others and get into the conversation.
So I do have a question for you before we turn it over to others. So you mentioned this workforce multiplier, and it's a I like that concept a lot because yes, even with the stuff that we've done with CCB in getting our resolutions through some of the AI process and even audio stuff, it's just saved us so much time. But I'm kind of curious to know what type of stuff that you personally have done personally with AI to sort of streamline the efficacy of the department.
Yeah, so I'm going to be careful.
I know it's a question that probably you can't disclose much of, but I'm just like, curious to see how you dealt with that stuff personally.
Yeah, in part because I'm retired. So I want to, with all due respect to present leadership, it's their voice that you want to hear on exactly how this is going to move forward. What I will tell you is what was going through my mind as we've been engaging in this conversation for the last 18, 12 months or so around AI. When I talk about in the workplace, I think about what a counselor might be doing in terms of some local regional labor market information gathering, to be more specific and more nuanced about what they were offering their consumers. I would think about how you can use it to search governance and compile very quickly what might be applicable to the decision you have at hand. I would think about it in the context of individuals whose English might be a second language, which is something we absolutely valued, and how that would otherwise be enhanced by having AI to help improve the presentation of the written materials. So those are just a couple of examples. I mean, there's so much that we can look at in terms of how it might be used to free up time. And I think what's important when you think about freeing up time, we think about it like you're going to free up these huge blocks of time. From some individuals, it might be, 4 hours. From others, it might be 1 hour. I think you got to think about it more globally and start freeing up 5, 10 minutes here, 20 over there, 15 over here, and then restructure that time to leverage that capacity to provide the services that, we're delivering. And again, I really emphasize, this is not just for the public sector. This is very much across the workforce, which includes all of our service providers, all of our partners across the state.
Thank you for that. Gabe, let's go with you.
Okay. First of all, hello, everybody. And I want to thank Guillermo and the convention planning folks for this invitation. It's kind of exciting to be able to present in or speak to y'all in a completely different way than I have for a long time. So thank you for that. When I think of AI in the workforce, I think that's a lot of stuff that Joe talked about. I know people that have used things like ChatGPT to help them prepare at least a first draft of a cover letter. If you do that, obviously it's going to be able to prepare the letter, but then you're going to have to kind of add some stuff in and maybe change a couple of things, but that can help you really generate that base to go off of. You can do it for reports. I know computers have different programs in them now that can generate your reports. But also, I think about all the different apps on our phones that can be used for not just productivity, but getting ready or our household usages. You know, that's a big part of what I do is not only teaching people how to use their devices, but touching on a lot of these different apps. We have things like Seeing AI that has the name AI right in it. We have Be My Eyes with Be My AI right in it. And just all these different things. Joe talked about language translation. And there are several different language translation apps out there. I've gotten into Uber rides that the driver spoke nothing but Chinese. But through Google Translate, he and I had a great conversation during that ride. He told me all about his dad who's still in China and is losing his sight. And just, you know, not too many years ago, we probably never would have been able to have that. So AI brings so much, not just to our work lives, but to all aspects of our lives. And I keep telling people that when I think of all the stuff that AI brings to us that we didn't have 40 years ago, 20 years ago, or even 5 years ago, it's pretty amazing and pretty exciting. And when we think about where the future of it's going, I feel like we need to be a little cautious, but it can be very exciting. I keep telling people that as a human, I'm a little bit scared about AI. I won't lie to y'all. But as a blind person, it is so exciting of all the different things it can do for us. And I look forward to getting into this discussion a little bit further. So I know that was hopefully fairly quick, but I'll pass it back to you, Guillermo, to move on.
Let's hear from Eli's perspective.
Hi, everyone. I'm Eli Andres from Resource for Independence Central Valley. And for AI, first, might think of visual description in the blind community, how we can use it to see the world around us. Taking a picture, maybe an environment that we once were able to and now be able to be described to us. AI could also be a use for education in a way of training yourself. Whether you're trying to learn a difficult concept, you can ask the AI to be your teacher in a geometry setting or a biology, but whatever topic it may be, it could be your teaching, a teacher for a day. It could also be the translation, like what Joe and Gabe has touched upon. It can translate from the language you might be using to a different language to provide multiple language for documents and such. AI can also be used in the daily use when you are trying to come up with ideas for yourself. Maybe you're thinking about dinner and you have no clue what to make. Now with AI, one can take a picture of what they got from their fridge and get feedback from AI to see what can they make up for dinner that night. So AI is quite advancing, and it's being a lot helpful to us, an aid to us, and hopefully not a replacement for a lot of things we do.
Great. So what is one of the things that you say has made you, because Eli, you mentioned feeding it prompts as far as like getting concepts. So what advice would you have as far as getting the most successful results, or as I like to call them, you know, feedback from the answers that you get from the AI? What have you done that's been helpful for you?
First off, it's mostly when you get your feedback from the AI response, going back and being a bit more detailed. Perhaps maybe your first round of asking your question, it didn't come back with a right answer. Maybe you put a scatter of foods and it thought it was an entirely different set of objects. Maybe it thought you were doing some knitting or something. It may thought the tomato was a clown's nose for some reason. And maybe you got to go back to it and tell it that that red object was a tomato. And so going back to the AI and helping it by providing feedback to it can help you out getting a better results from AI.
Hey, Guillermo, can I add to that?
Sure.
So I think this past fall, I was up in Seattle at a conference, and we had somebody there that you could tell had been living AI for decades. And one of the things that he impressed upon the audience is that when you're getting, pardon the expression, when you're getting garbage out of your query of AI, the idea is not to stop querying AI, but change your query that you're asking of AI. Let me give you an example. A few weeks ago, my grandson and my daughter and my wife and I were having dinner, and something came up, and we were going to ask the smart speaker the question. I posed the question. It totally said, I don't know what you're saying. My daughter posed the question. It barely did a little bit better. And my eight-year-old grandson posed the question, was totally different than what either one of us had said, and it nailed it. It gave exactly the answer that we were looking for. And I think just use that thinking of, if you're not getting the result you're looking for, it's probably because you need to think about the question in a different way. And frankly, there's lots of benefit asking multiple questions from different frameworks to, and I don't want to say validate, but to get a good sense of what it's generating and its applicability to the issue at hand.
All right, that sounds really good. And Gabe, how about you?
Could you repeat this question?
So what have you found to be helpful as far as getting good results from your interactions with AI?
Well, the others have said just, you know, I'm fond of reminding my colleagues that artificial intelligence is no match for natural stupidity. So, you know, it can be very helpful, but I think it was Eli that was talking about like taking a picture of it and it's saying a tomato and you have to be like, no, this is a clown's nose. You know, you have to kind of be able to have an idea of what the thing's telling you and know when it's totally off versus maybe just a little bit off, versus maybe completely accurate. So it's a balance of using our own brains, but also using whatever particular app it is to be able to get the information you want or to be able to interpret what it's telling you. If you're using something like ChatGPT to either generate something or ask it something, you have to be a little bit careful about, or I shouldn't say careful. It's a learning process, I'd say, about learning what information to give it, put into it. Because most of the time, it's going to try to spit out whatever it thinks you're asking, given the prompt it's given. So that's just kind of an experimental learning how to prompt it for the information you want. But if it's taking a picture, then, as I was saying, you have to just be able to interpret. And again, I guess that's a learning process, too. You have to interpret what it's telling you. You know, I know when I've experimented with things like Be My AI, it's awesome because you can take a picture out a window and learn things about what's out your window, maybe at home or maybe in your office, that you never knew. Or if I've done demonstrations where took a picture of one of our counters at work, and it described it as, this is a counter with several computers on it. There's monitors and keyboards and a Coke can and cables all over the place. And you're going, wait, a Coke can? That doesn't belong here. So, you know, it's just funny, the stuff that, as somebody who can't see that scene that you're taking a picture of, that sometimes you hear things totally unexpected. And it was totally accurate in that instance, but it was just a bit of a shock of going, wait, this doesn't belong here. And then went and started feeling along the counter and found this Coke can that somebody had left there. You know, so again, it was quite shocking, but it was very helpful at the same time to be able to clean up that area.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be fun. It can be experiment. I always like to say that if you're going to start experimenting with this, you know, for those of you out there that may have never used this stuff, if you're going to take the pictures, and I'd be curious to hear what Eli and Joe think about this stuff, but if you're going to take pictures, try to do it maybe in an environment that you know first, because that can help if you have that baseline of you're taking a picture maybe of your desk at home or your living room or something, you know, areas that you know and you know what's there, then that can help to build that baseline of how it's working when you go and use it out in the world in an area that you're not familiar with to try to get that info.
That's true. And so given the makeup of the organization, I think about how resistant we are to change and how, you know, we're so stuck in what's comfortable, you know? So my question to the three of you is, what advice would you give someone that is in that mindset, whether it be maybe somebody younger who's not used to technology, or even a senior who, you know, just has a hard time with this? I mean, how would you, what advice would you give to sort of get your feet wet into this big daunting world of AI, which is sometimes so unreliable and just unpredictable?
Yeah, I'll be glad to kick this off. So, I mean, I think first you have to recognize, just call out what you're saying, which there is a generational aspect to this, and it's okay. But I think when you put that on the table, there are some of us who are no longer in the workplace, and so maybe using it for work is not going to necessarily be what you focus on. But think about how you might use it for everyday things around the house. So for example, I use the smart speaker for timers. I use the smart speaker just for listening to the radio. And that all has AI built into it. I mean, a lot of that already has AI built into
it. Yeah, we're already using it, not even realizing it.
Exactly. So one of the things, for example, is we go do a lot of Google search. Well, when you go do Google search, it gives you a lot of resources that you then got to go read. If you use AI to do that search, it's capturing and summarizing the resources from all that. And I'm going to venture a guess that most everybody on here is using JAWS. And the current version of JAWS has a major AI built into it, not only for picture smart, like somebody's been mentioned, but think about, I don't quite remember how to do this in JAWS. You could just bring up your FS companion and type in what you want to do. And without having to read the manual or read cheat sheets or all, it'll give you a step-by-step very succinctly and very effectively. So find those individual uses and let it grow.
Eli?
One of the best ways I was able to get someone that was an older generation into AI is when I first got her using the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. When she told me her experience of using it when she was at her parent-teacher conference, she was able to participate during the time where they're handing out leaflets, pamphlets, and she was able to capture the information that was given to her and take part in the parent-teacher conference. And she was blown away how AI was able to help her being in the moment instead of being like a second class, I guess, getting information later. But it really helped her a lot.
So how about we take some questions from the audience and see if there's anything out there? Any questions for this group of people?
Yes, you do have two hands raised. So, Dan, you are going to be up.
Congratulations, Joe, for your retirement. That's awesome. And Joe, you are one of the first people I ever met that had a computer in his office that was using it with speech. So Joe goes back a long ways with technology, and you can certainly tell today. I wanted to add something that I don't know. I know a lot of the techies know this, but we all know who Ray Kurzweil is. And Ray is the father of AI. And Joe was talking about exponential growth in AI. And he's the dude that came up with the whole theory behind that and how fast it's growing and all that kind of stuff. So I had an opportunity to meet with Ray Kurzweil back in the 70s when I did an interview with him on Metro Media, on the Metro Media Network. And that aired all over the country. I was able to pay my rent that month, which was nice. So AI helped me pay my rent. The one thing I did want to add to what everybody is saying is a cautionary note on GPT. I use Gemini too, and I really like it. Anytime I ask any kind of question, no matter how stupid, it gives me the right answer. I would say 99.995% of the time. But there is, and I'm writing a book, and when I'm doing my research for the book, I was looking for the very first school for the blind, and it listed, the very first guide dog school, and it listed 1787. No, that's not true. So you really have to check its work if you're going to get serious about, you know, throwing this out in the public, your results out in the public, because it can let you down. So thank you, guys. I think you guys did a really good job presenting it. And I think that there's also exponential growth in the user of AI. The more you work with it, it remembers. Some AIs actually remember what you've typed in and correlates that with your particular knowledge. And that's how good the AI is getting. So thank you.
Any other? Do we have any emails?
Cameron, can I jump in here real quick?
Sure.
Dan, thank you for that, for those comments. And I just want to specifically thank you for your cautionary comment there. That kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, if you're going to be using AI for pictures or for finding out what's around you, just knowing your stuff and being able to not necessarily have AI verify it, but to build on that. So if you know, you know, roughly when a certain date of something was, and it gives you an answer that's, you know, a century and a half off, you know, maybe go back again. So thank you for that. And I agree, just, you know, use a little bit of your own common sense and your own natural intelligence to question. If something doesn't sound right on a response, it might not be.
Eli, do you have anything to add to this?
No, but Gabe touched it really well that we all should do a due diligence of what was presented to us from AI and checking the facts if that was correct or not, or just providing another different kind of question if you did not get the right response.
It's all in phrasing. And I was talking to a friend yesterday, and he was mentioning that what he does is say something like, pretend I am a bartender and I want to mix up such and such drink. Give me a good recipe. Or pretend I am a scientist and I want to learn more about a particular subject. So it's getting it into that mindset. And so that's why I had asked the question about, you know, phrasing and whatnot. So any other questions?
Yes. Bob Acosta, you can go ahead.
Well, it may have been answered, but as an old, old, old retired school teacher in the public schools, I said that part. I won't say it again. I flirt with Leah, by the way, on LI every night. Tell her good night. She answers. She's a robot. But these kids are tricky enough. Number one, what if I used to give an assignment on the Battle of Gettysburg and a kid just gets AI and rattles it off? How do you teach him to think and research himself rather than the words? I used to catch some copying because they use big words and I'd bring him in and say, okay, tell me what circa 1950 means. Well, I don't know. Well, you used it. That's the way I did it. But how do you have any advice for teachers and every professors that get these AI essays or term projects? Thank you.
Yeah.
I've got some answers.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I've seen several things on this, Bob. One is I've seen teachers that are now telling their students they have to write things with, you know, out longhand by pen instead of using their computers, and they have to do them in class now. Mm-hmm. Also, in addition to that is there are programs that teachers can use to run an essay or run an assignment through that will actually scan it and tell them what percentage of AI that paper is. So if somebody does, you know, runs it through and says, oh, this paper is 92% AI generated, then, you know, that gives them a pretty good idea that they didn't hardly do any work on it. But if it were to come back maybe and say it's 13% AI generated, then maybe that tells that teacher that, okay, they used this, you know, maybe they used AI to get an outline and get started. So I think it all depends on that teacher, how much AI they are willing to allow, but also there are those tools that allow them to verify it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gabe. That really helps. So I'll pass it on to my friends.
So let me add a little bit to that, Bob. I think I'm going to take a little bit bigger than just the teacher and the assignment in the classroom. There's lots of conversation going on about, well, this means that people won't do X or they're cheating or they're doing something else. Mm-hmm. So let's just take that on for a second. First, as somebody that did a heck of a lot of hiring, I would invite people to use AI to generate whatever they wanted to generate to apply for the job. Do so at your risk. When you're sitting in front of me for the interview, and you can't speak to what's on your resume, let that speak for itself. The other thing is, this isn't new, right? I mean, if somebody is going to have somebody else to do their resume, or somebody's going to have somebody else to do their assignment, or somebody, you know, all those types of things have been around for a very long time. There's not too much new in human behavior when it comes to that. And it's also, let's look at how technology and how society has to both adapt and evolve for what's at hand. There was a point in time that using a calculator was just like creating a mortal sin, because you would be dumb and you couldn't do this and that and the other. And today, think about how frequently we use a calculator, including on every damn phone. Right? Are people cheating because they use Word to spell check or to get their grammar correctly? So there will be that period of adjustment between what technology enables us to do and how we as humans embrace the use of that technology, right? And I mean, we can go on. How do you apply that in, for example, autonomous driving or in the medical community, right? Right. So there's just so many types of things there, but I want to lift up the idea that human behavior about misrepresenting or doing something, there's nothing new about that. right? AI is just going to be another tool that they can use. But at the end of the day, there will be ways to address that. And again, I never was bothered by somebody that submitted a resume they couldn't defend when they were having a conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. And I just wanted to time check with Rob.
Yes, it's approaching 2:30. I don't think we have any emails, or I think Steve would have responded. So I think
thank you guys for the questions. And I just want to thank Gabe and Eli and Joe for joining us for this really good interactive discussion. And this is just the beginning of a wider range discussion that if people want it, we can definitely get with our technology people and maybe host some type of an event like this. So I want to thank you guys for your participation. Good discussion.
Thank All you. Right, and I, good. I, really and good. I guess I would just end by saying if you're hearing about this stuff for the first time, feel free to reach out. I don't know about the other guys, but I'm willing to talk to people about it. And, you know, I'm sure we all know somebody there that has experience, and probably all of us even know people that have more experience than we do. So, you know, just reach out to somebody and don't be afraid to ask questions.
All right. Well, let's, before we get to our next panel, which we're running slightly behind schedule, I hope that's going to be okay. But let's go ahead and do another door prize, and then we'll do...
I'm sorry, before we do anything, can we have Leslie Tom raise her hand, and can she be brought up to the side of the stage, please?
Yep, I'm getting it. Just a second. I was giving Lisa permission, and I'm getting Leslie.
Thank you very much. All right, go ahead, Rob.
All right, so we'll start with the door prize, then we'll do one of the chapter of the year presentations, recordings.
Okay, thank you, Rob. We're going to do a $25 Starbucks card from Contra Costa chapter. And the winner is Lynette Kersey. Congratulations, hey. Lynette.
A member of the SBCB chapter at one time, and now a member of Kahlua, so very good. All right, Larry, you ready to play us a chapter of the year recording?
I am.
Great.
It's IDC.
Inclusive okay. Diversity of California, or IDC, is now 4 years old. We believe a rising tide lifts all boats. Our focus is to lift up the concerns of Black, Indigenous, Hispanic, Asian, Pacific, Islanders, and other marginalized communities. But our programs are for everyone. We have held listening sessions on hate crimes, aggregate data's importance to a nonprofit, legal cases affecting people who are blind or have low vision and are incarcerated or face reproductive health discrimination, the history of deportation and people with disabilities, and fun games like Who Am I Anyway? Or Name That Tune. We have held seminars on Law 504 and the fight for disability rights and on self-care and our mental health in turbulent times. We have something to help everybody while reaching out to communities who often are unaware of the resources available for people who are blind or have low vision living in California. We honor diversity while promoting unity.
Okay, thank you, Regina, for that recording.